5. Eli woke up in a cheap hotel bed twice the size of his at home. The sheets were stiff and the pillow was overstuffed, but it felt luxurious. He felt pretty sure the trip to Boston was one of the dumbest things he'd ever done, so it was good to start the day on a positive. He checked out of the hotel by 8, and the woman at the desk suggested a parking garage on State Street. He moved his car, tried not to panic too much at the garage's day rates, and walked to Faneuil Hall. Eli's last time at Quincy Market had been almost 10 years ago, just before graduating high school. The all-pedestrian area, two broad walkways north and south of the main market building, had felt very exotic and European up against his small-town experiences. It still did. He stood and stared at the brick walkways and the colored awnings and the bubble-like street lamps as dozens of people moved around him. Most of the restaurants and shops wouldn't open for another hour, when the crowds would only get bigger. He walked down South Market, looped around the big plaza at the end with the Gap and American Eagle stores, then headed back along North Market. He looked up at Faneuil Hall as he walked past it and started down the south side again. A few people walked out with stacks of chairs and sandwich signs. More people drifted into the marketplace. Men, women, teenagers. A few men and women spread out blankets on the walkway that led to Commercial Street and displayed just enough wares to not be hassled for it. Eli watched every face he passed and studied every distant coat. A bright yellow and green booth, not much more than a pushcart, sat halfway down North Market. Its sign said Trolley Tours. The woman inside was a few years younger than Eli, with short, colorful hair and horn-rimmed glasses. White earphones hung on each side of her head as she stared at something below the counter. "Hi," said Eli. "This is probably a long shot, but could you help me out?"
"I could try," she replied without looking up, barely into her day and bored.
"I'm looking for someone selling information." She glanced up at him, her mouth wrinkled.
"You mean like a bookstore or something?"
"I don't think so. Maybe someone in another booth or a pushcart?" She shook her head, shrugged, and her gaze settled back to whatever was below the counter.
"There's Newbery Comics and Teeny Billboards. I think the Best of Boston store has a couple of books, too."
"I don't think it's books," he said. Her focus didn't shift back to him.
"Sorry, that's all I've got."
Eli walked around the area again, then cut through the market itself. Another trolley stand sat between the Gap, some pushcarts, and three of the blanket vendors. The crowds thickened, making it harder for him to see anyone more than 20 or 30 feet away, the forest blocking his view of the trees. It also didn't help that there were a dozen or so people in period dress wandering around Faneuil Hall by 11 o'clock, various performers and reenactors who'd all come to the market for lunch. At least 4 of them wore blue frock coats. Eli leaped toward the first 2, but managed to stop himself before he did anything that earned him far too much attention. There were also a fair number of people in dark suits, many with hats. Hats seemed to be making a comeback. His pulse surged twice as he tried to remember if the faceless man had hair or not. Both times, a slight turn or shift of the head would reveal lips that moved or eyes that blinked. Eli kept watch, but felt pretty sure the faceless man would attract a lot of attention and wouldn't be able to sneak up on anyone. By 11:30, worry gnawed at him. It crossed his mind Harry might not even be wearing her colonial clothes. Sure, she'd worn them the times he'd met her before, but it hardly meant she wore them all the time. Would he recognize her in a leather jacket and skirt, or a UMass sweatshirt and jeans? What if her hair was down and loose, or piled up under a floppy hat? He brushed the thoughts aside. He'd know her, and she'd know him. The man at Teeny Billboards had nothing for him. The woman at Newbery Comics told him about the cool new Machine Man graphic novel, also available in digital for the tablet Eli didn't own. The Best of Boston store, it turned out, only had books during the holiday season, but the salesman seemed pretty sure he could order one for Eli and have it within 2 weeks. 11:40 became 11:45. Eli paced back and forth through the marketplace, past various shops selling coffee and Thai food and pastries and gourmet hot dogs. Another one of the reenactors passed him, a heavy man talking on a cell phone while he chewed through a bagel sandwich. His frock coat was the color of old leaves and rust. At 11:55, Eli stood at the far end of the marketplace, a hallway intersection between a Japanese restaurant and a pretzel shop. The crowd surged around him, all desperate to squeeze in as much lunchtime as possible. A shoulder bumped his, a handbag hit his hip. He stretched up on his toes and tried to see to the far end of the hall. A dozen shades of blue stood out, but none of them the one he was looking for. He needed to look outside. North or south? He only had time for one before noon. He picked south. Eli marched past Victoria's Secret and Urban Outfitters and a Samsonite store. His eyes flitted from person to person. Some met his gaze, some glared. None of them were Harry. The old Faneuil Hall building loomed ahead. Crowds gathered to watch two different street performers. A man played pop music on an electric blue violin. A woman passed five bowling pin clubs back and forth through the air in a whirl of color. Noon approached, slid past him, and vanished into the crowd. Eli ran across to the north side of the market and speedwalked through the crowd. He passed more shops and a Tex-Mex restaurant and the trolley tours booth and countless people in a variety of outfits. He ended at the plaza. His eyes flitted down to his watch. 12:07 p.m. His feet slogged across the red bricks and the crowd swirled around him. Tourists, college students, lawyers and bankers on lunch break. Eli looked at his watch again. 11 past now. He debated walking down South Market again. Maybe whatever transaction Harry had come for was still in progress. Maybe he just hadn't seen her on his last pass. Maybe she'd already finished her business and was on her way. "Hey," he said to one of the blanket salesmen. The man had half a dozen paintings spread out on the grass, the kind of generic things that graced the Stallbank lobby and the hotel room Eli'd woken up in. "Have you been watching the crowd? I've been trying to find someone." The man glared up from his current masterpiece. Paint covered his fingertips, and Eli realized the man wasn't using a brush.
"Does it look like I've been watching the crowd?"
"I'm just asking." The man snorted and lowered his eyes back to his painting. "Who are you looking for?" called out a seasoned voice.
"Man or woman?"
A few yards away, between two benches, another salesman sat beneath a tree. A blue and gray baseball cap with a spider logo, smudged with years of use, shaded his eyes. A battered knapsack stretched behind him and a small panel of slatted wood, maybe twice the size of a help wanted sign, balanced beneath his hand. It reminded Eli of an old window shutter, and he wasn't entirely sure that it wasn't one. A dozen necklaces and bracelets hung on the shutter, each one tagged with a little slip of white card on a string. The blanket under the man had been folded into more of a thick pad, probably easier to scoop up, too, if one of the wandering policemen approached to give him a hard time.
"Woman," said Eli. "About my age? Thin? Blonde?"
The salesman smiled.
"Not much to go on."
He looked to be in his late 50s or early 60s, with a silver beard that was long but well managed. His limbs were thin without looking unhealthy. He wore five or six layers, starting with a Celtics t-shirt and building out to a black and white scarf that looked Middle Eastern to Eli's inexperienced eyes. The man could have been a veteran of the first Gulf War, maybe even the recent one. He looked like he'd been sitting there between the benches for a while.
"Last time I saw her," Eli said, to the air as much as to the man, "she was wearing colonial clothes."
The salesman grinned.
"Reenactor. Woman after my own heart."
His fingers slipped between the necklaces and plucked at a few silver strands hanging on his board. His free hand gestured at the crowd.
"Is she just wearing a cloak or a full dress and petticoat?"
Eli pinballed between a desire not to be rude to the salesman, a mad urge to keep looking for Harry, and a swelling worry that he might be an idiot. He took one last look out at the crowd. Older women, younger women, Indian, black, Asian, white, tall and short, thin and heavy, blonde, brunette, auburn, black, one bright green, and another with nothing but dark stubble across her scalp. None of them were Harry.
"Actually," said Eli, turning back to the salesman, "she wears a frock coat and a tricorn."
The salesman blinked. The edges of his expression shifted just enough for Eli to register it.
What color?
Blue, said Eli. Classic colonial blue. He shook his head and gave the panel of jewelry a final, polite gaze.
It all looks nice. Sorry to waste your time like this.
The salesman's smile shifted a little more. The practiced, polite expression slipped away, the real one left in its place, twisted closer to a smirk.
You talking about Harry?
Air rushed through Eli's nose and into his chest.
What?
The old man's smirk spread.
You know her? Harry Pritchard. Is she here?
You just missed her. She blew through pretty quick.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure she was looking for me.
He held out a hand.
Theodoric Knickerbocker.
Eli took the hand automatically and shook it.
Sorry?
My name, the salesman said with a tug at the brim of his cap. For friends and the better class of acquaintances, it's just Theo. Knowing Harry bumps you right up.
Thanks.
He shifted on his feet.
So you know where she's going?
Theo pursed his lips and leaned toward Eli.
Maybe.
Eli waited.
Well?
What's it worth to you?
Seriously?
I'm a businessman, kid. I don't give anything away.
She's in danger.
So you say. Harry can take care of herself.
They stared at each other. Eli broke first.
How much are we talking about?
We all have our plans and secrets to keep,
said the salesman.
And Harry won't like it if I'm giving out clues to where she's going. Trust is worth something.
How much?
Let's say $100.
That's not much to give up someone's secrets and trust.
If it's not much, you shouldn't have any trouble paying it.
Eli thought of the parking lot fees again and sucked in his cheeks.
Fine.
Theo sighed.
How much cash do you have on you?
Sorry?
Cash. In your wallet and pockets, how much?
Eli did some quick math.
About $30, I think. I could get some more if there's an ATM around here somewhere.
Theo shook his head.
Look at the jewelry. Count to five. And then give me 25.
You're selling her out for $25?
I'm not selling her out. I'm just selling relevant information to a potential rival.
I'm not her rival. I'm trying to help her.
Well, in that case, Theo said, I don't feel bad about selling you the information.
Eli sighed, looked at the board, and pulled out his wallet. He only had 28, it turned out. He'd need to hit the cash machine no matter what. He thought of Harry's shrinking wad of Confederate currency.
Is this how much she paid?
Harry's a longtime customer and a friend. She gets special rates.
Eli plucked a handful of bills from his wallet and held them out. Theo extended two long fingers, clamped them across the bills, and folded the cash back into his palm. The hand vanished into his pocket, then reappeared with the fingers spread wide. He reached across to the board and his fingers danced through the array of necklaces and bracelets. He selected a bracelet, glanced up at Eli, then moved on to the next one. A quick twist of his wrist freed it, and he held it up.
Is this some sort of clue?
Asked Eli, taking the bracelet. Small gears of brass and steel dangled from it like charms.
Is it a signal for someone?
No, it's a cheap bracelet, said the salesman. If I don't give you something off the board, the cop over there is going to think I slipped you a dime bag or something. They'll leave street vendors alone if we don't give them a reason to bother us.
Oh.
You got a car?
Eli gestured toward the distant parking garage. A couple blocks away, yeah.
You should be able to catch her then. She's headed out to the left coast. Pasadena.
Eli sifted through the hundreds of city names in his head.
Pasadena, California? Where they do the Rose Bowl?
That's the one.
On the other side of the country?
That's what all the maps say, yeah. She's going to be there on Wednesday next week, 4:32 in the afternoon.
Theo looked at his watch.
That's almost exactly 5 days from now, with the time change. After that, though,
he shrugged.
Who knows where she's headed from there?
So where in Pasadena is she going?
She'll be at the fork in the road.
Eli waited for more information.
Could you maybe be a bit more specific?
What, like an address or something?
Yeah, or at least a cross street or something.
I don't know. Go to Pasadena and ask somebody.
Ask them where the fork in the road is?
Yeah, what am I, a tour guide?
Eli switched tactics. What's she looking for? Theo's smirk melted into a frown.
You've got no idea what's going on, do you? You're just chasing her because she smiled at you the right way.
What? His tongue stumbled against his teeth. No, no, no.
It's okay. You wouldn't be the first young man smitten with her, although I've never seen one go this far.
Smitten? The smirk returned.
Have the hots for her, dumbass.
Well, no. I mean, she's hot, yeah, but I just wanted to warn her.
Warn her?
Yeah, there's a guy after her. A creepy guy. The old man smirked and raised a brow.
At least you're honest.
What? No, not me. I mean, I'm just here to warn her about him. The man with...
Man with what?
You wouldn't believe me.
Kidding. If we both trotted out all the things we'd seen that the other wouldn't believe, I'd bet $1 million I'd win by a wide margin. What did this guy have that got you so spooked?
Eli studied the man for a moment, then shrugged. It's not something he had. It's what he didn't have that freaked me out.
Okay, I'll bite. What didn't he have?
The last words slipped from the man's weathered lips and took some of his confidence with them. Realization and worry settled across his brows. An echo of the expression twisted in Eli's stomach. This is going to sound freaky and impossible, he said. But this guy didn't have
a face,
finished the old vendor. He glanced over at the finger painter.
He was wearing a plastic mask over a smooth face.
Eli stared at the old man, and then he spewed out 2 days' worth of fear and confusion. I saw him on Wednesday, but I saw him once before when I was a little kid. He drove past me on the road when I was on my bike. A whistle slipped out of Theo's lips.
Bet that gave you nightmares for a while.
Sort of. For a while, I think I convinced myself it wasn't real. Even after I met Harry again. The old salesman nodded.
You wouldn't be the first.
A shiver shook Eli, and it took him a moment to realize his body had just relaxed. Tension he didn't even know he'd been carrying slipped away and left him feeling free, reassured. Seeing him just brought back all these childhood memories. I think I almost wet my pants.
Again, Theo said with a smirk, you wouldn't be the first.
And his voice was just awful. I thought it was the mask, but then I realized it was his skin muffling. What is he? How can he talk with no mouth, or breathe, or see?
You heard his voice?
Theo shuddered.
How close were you?
He was right there in my cubicle with me, Eli said. He was asking me about Harry and standing closer to me than you are. He had me kind of blocked in my chair, and then he...
Wait, said Theo, holding up a hand. You talked to him?
Yeah.
An actual conversation.
The term threw Eli for a moment. He asked me about Harry, interrogated me, I guess. I didn't really tell him anything, but that's how I knew she was in trouble.
He talked to you,
Theo said, considering the words as they slid out of his throat. Talked to me, threatened me, choked me. The memory of strong fingers prickled the skin of Eli's neck. Theo dropped the board of jewelry onto the blanket. The pieces jangled against one another.
You stupid rookie,
he growled. He rolled off the blanket, grabbed its edges, and tossed them one across the other, folding it around the display board. The finger painter looked up from his masterpiece. What's wrong?
Think about it, kid,
Theo said. He looped a string of knotted shoelaces around the blanket and pulled it into a tight bundle.
He asked you about Harry, let you go, and you came running straight here. That sound like a smart move on your part? You ever seen a goddamn movie?
The cool air slipped into Eli's collar and down his back. I wanted to help.
You want to help?
Theo threw his knapsack over one shoulder and shoved the bundle under the other arm.
Get the hell away from me. Managed to stay under the radar for 40 years, and now you blaze a trail straight to my... God damn it.
His gaze slid from Eli's face to lock on something behind him. Eli turned. The faceless man stood halfway down the market, taller than most of the crowd. His hat added a few more inches even as it shadowed his blank skull from the midday sun. Eli could see a gleam of plastic wrapped across the space where the man's eyes should have been. No one reacted to the clear mask or the smooth skin beneath it. Theo's free hand grabbed Eli's wrist and yanked. The salesman ran past the finger painter, across the plaza, dragging Eli until the younger man's feet started to catch up. They pushed past shoppers and lunchgoers and random wanderers.
"Move!" snarled Theo. "We've got to get out of his range!"
"Hello, Mr. Knickerbocker," bellowed the faceless man. "And Mr. Teague. If you could both please remain where you are, it would be appreciated. Don't attempt to escape."
Eli shook free of Theo's grip. Theo didn't hesitate, adjusting his bundles and diving between a man and woman in sharp overcoats. He didn't look back to see if Eli followed him. Eli followed him. He sidestepped quickly around the couple, pushing the man aside as gently as possible. "Sorry," he called back over his shoulder. As his head turned, people shrieked behind him. The crowd scattered as the faceless man raised a huge pistol. It came up through the parting crowd like a hungry shark breaking the surface of the water. The faceless man stood in the open space, a black-suited statue, with one arm raised and aimed in Eli's direction.
"Last warning, Mr. Knickerbocker."
"Don't stop, kid,"
Theo snarled back over his shoulder. His lurching gait carried him toward the wide plaza exit beneath the steel and glass roof.
"Keep running. Get as far away from him as possible. As long as you're close, they'll be certain."
The gunshot echoed over the crowd across the plaza between the buildings. Theo's baseball cap flipped in the air. The old man dropped his blanket bundle and took three quick steps. He let the knapsack slide off his shoulder and took three more. Eli's momentum carried him past Theo, and he twisted around to urge him to leave the knapsack. But Theo's next step became a stagger. His knees sagged. His head dropped forward to display a thick, wet line of red spreading out across the salesman's scalp. Theo crumpled. His skull struck the bricks with a sound not unlike a bat connecting with a well-used Little League baseball. Blood drained out between the cobblestones, a gleaming red spider web around Theo's head. Eli stumbled three, four more steps, and paused. The faceless man strode forward. A few more shrieks and cries bounced in the air. Half the people scattered before him, the rest froze with expressions of horror or anticipation. Theo vanished behind a grove of legs as some shoppers pushed in for a better view.
"Excuse me,"
the faceless man called out. He slipped through the crowd without effort, the pistol down, his badge held high in his other hand. Eli pushed back into the crowd, away from Theo, away from the body. He shifted direction and skirted around the outer edge of the plaza, doubling back the way he'd come, back to where Theo's blanket had been spread out. He guessed he was 30 or 40 feet away when he risked a glance back.
"Pardon me, ladies and gentlemen," the faceless man called out. "Please stand aside."
The tall figure brushed past the lunchtime diners and shoppers and passers-by to stand by the fallen salesman. A few glanced up at the tall man, but then their eyes returned to the body. Why didn't anyone react? A 6.5-foot tall man with no face stalked through the crowd and no one stared or screamed or recoiled. The faceless man's shoulders hunched and his arms seemed to tense. Even from 30 feet away, Eli could sense the annoyance wafting off the tall figure. The masked skull turned to the left, then to the right. Eli saw two police officers work their way through the crowd toward the faceless man, and a cool wave of relief washed over him. A woman and a younger man, they seemed to bob up and down through the crowd like swimmers in rough water. The distance between the police and the faceless man shrunk, and then the last few shoppers stepped away to create a space. The female officer stood near the faceless man. Her pistol was out, but she didn't seem to be threatening the broad-shouldered monster. She looked up at the plastic mask, at the thing in the faceless man's hand, and nodded three times. She turned to her partner and exchanged a few quick words. Then they both waved the crowds away from Theo's fallen body, clearing a space in the plaza. The female officer glanced back at the faceless man and gave a confirming nod.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the voice rolled out across the plaza, not amplified but clear and loud. It reminded him of the actors at the Algonquin Playhouse, booming out the lyrics of Buddy Holly without making it seem like shouting. Eli could still hear the soft, muffled edges on the words. The faceless man lifted his arm and displayed the object in his hand, the badge in its leather wallet.
I know this has been disturbing for all of you, and I'm sorry you had to see this. Rest assured, this is a matter of national security. We're looking for a dangerous fugitive who may have spoken to this man in the past half hour or so.
People stared at the tall, blank-faced man in the suit. Some looked curious. A few squinted suspiciously at the raised hand with the badge, but still, no panic, no alarm.
The fugitive is a woman,
the faceless man told the crowd.
Approximately 30 years old, 5'10", blonde hair. She is most likely dressed in a blue coat, like one of the colonial reenactors here, possibly wearing a tricorn hat.
A few people on the edges of the crowd looked around. They eyed the distant reenactors. Some of them pointed. The police scanned the dozens of faces in front of them.
She may also have an accomplice,
continued the faceless man.
Male, 29, 5'11", brown hair. They were both supposed to meet with this man, a collaborator.
Without turning his blank features, he gestured at the body splayed on the bricks behind him. A cold chill crawled over Eli's skull and slipped down his back. A level of panic he hadn't felt since childhood tingled in his chest and fingertips. He took a step back and let his shoulders slump a little. He let his chin settle low and hunched a little more. His left foot slid back again and he dragged the right one after it. He took three more steps backward. Most of the people in the crowd still looked at the faceless man, but a few on the edges glanced around. A few yards away, the finger painter scanned the crowd, his head swinging back and forth. Eli pulled his sweatshirt hood up, realized it made him look like every guilty person since the creation of hoodie sweatshirts, and pushed it back down. He turned to his left, parallel to the crowd, and then let his path curve around, away from the faceless man, and toward the streets outside Quincy Market.
Hello, Mr. Teague,
boomed the voice.
Good to see you again.
Eli wasn't stupid. It was a trick to make him turn and look, to get him to reveal himself. He kept his shoulders slumped, his head down, and continued toward the road. He passed a few people heading the other way into the plaza. They looked ahead at the crowd, then glanced behind them. Two or three of them glanced at Eli. He reached the corner, stopped, and stretched. He filled his tight chest with air and tried very hard to look like a man with all the time in the world. A man definitely not trying to slip away from a crowd that might be turning into a mob. He looked to his right, down the street, and turned a little more to look over his shoulder at the plaza. The faceless man had waded through the crowd. The blank sockets behind his plastic mask were aimed at Eli. He took another step forward and raised his arm. Eli ran.